Okay, so we have the opportunity to learn together this year, at the beginning of this year, the laws of Hanukkah through the Sugyas and the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. And it's a very exciting opportunity with many fascinating things. Hanukkah in general is really a fascinating limud. At the beginning of the year, I would normally like to give an introductory shiur. And normally there's a Mishnah that you can start with. The beginning of a Masechta, there's a Mishnah that you can start with to give an introduction from. And Hanukkah is unique. And Hanukkah, you'd expect there to be a Masechta. And there is no Masechta. And it's been commented, Rav Futner has an essay about this, and others have pointed out that Hanukkah is uniquely the realm of Torah Shebaal Peh. We heard this morning at the Kenneth about the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh, and the fact that perhaps most of the Torah, as the Gemara suggests, is given to us in the category of the oral Torah, is Shebaal Peh, was originally not meant to be written down. And Hanukkah represents this in a particularly powerful way, because even by the standard of Torah Shebaal Peh, Hanukkah is Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's because there's no Masechta devoted to Hanukkah, and it's not accurate the way it's sometimes said that Hanukkah is not mentioned in the Mishnayos. It is mentioned in the Mishnayos. There are Mishnayos certainly acknowledge the existence of Hanukkah, but don't take it head-on as a topic. The halachos of Hanukkah are not given their own space within the Mishnayos. And that seems to be perhaps reflective of this idea that Rav Futner and others emphasize, that Hanukkah is meant to be a yontif which particularly emphasizes Torah Shebaal Peh. This really highlights the unique bond between God and the Jewish people, that even when the Torah Shebaal Peh was written down, Hanukkah still remained somewhat in this realm, still remained somewhat more Masorah dependent than other areas of Halacha. So we don't have an opening Mishnah to start with for the laws of Hanukkah, but we have a sugya which is very yesodistic, a sugya which, if we try to analyze it, we try to understand the various components that come out of it, it will hopefully give us, working backwards, some type of a insight into how Hanukkah operates, into what Hanukkah is all about. And then after the sugya, the Gemara towards the bottom of Chof Aleph Amud Beis then starts introducing, okay, what is Hanukkah? Where did Hanukkah come from? But before it gets to that, so there's a Halacha L'maisa passage, which we'll start with. And this opening passage has at least three sugyas in it. There are at least three halachic topics which interlock. And our hope is, at least this passage with its three sugyas, I'd like to try to cover before Yontif all the three interlocking topics, which contain many, many practical implications. So I assume most of you had a chance to see the Gemara. We'll just take a quick look at it and try to highlight what the topics that we're going to focus on and what we'll start with today. But just take a quick look at the Gemara. We don't always read together inside, but today we'll just take a quick look to get us into it. So the Gemara in the bottom of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph starts off telling us about the inferior wicks and oils, which we're not supposed to use for Neir Shabbos. This is very familiar because we recite Baba Madlikin every Friday night, so we know that there are rules as to what qualifies and what doesn't qualify for Neir Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, psilos u'shmonim sh'amru chachamim ein madlikin behen b'shabbos, ein madlikin behen b'chanaka, bein b'shabbos, bein b'chol. This is the last three lines in Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, that whatever is disqualified for use on Shabbos, for use for Shabbos, which are basically inferior wicks, inferior oils, where we're not going to get a strong flame that we have confidence in. So too, we shouldn't use them for Hanukkah, neither Hanukkah during the week or Shabbos Hanukkah. So says the Gemara, Amar Rava, my time with Rav Huna. What's Rav Huna's reason? He is one of three opinions on this matter. So he who says that you shouldn't use it any time on Hanukkah, not during the week or on Shabbos, what are his reasons? Kasavar kapsa zakukla umutur lishtamesh la'ora. Two important topics right there. Those right away you have two sugyas that were just identified. That the first issue is that kapsa zakukla, that if the flame should go out, if there is kiboy, that's a malacha, right? If there is kiboy taking place, the flame gets extinguished, then zakukla, you are obligated to relight it. So what? So relight it. So why should we forbid you from using these oils just because you're obligated to keep it lit? So if it goes out, you'll relight it. What's the big issue? So if you saw Rashi here, and we'll get into this more later, but there's a lot of attention paid to this Rashi. Maybe somebody can tell me what the issue is that gets so much attention on this Rashi. The Rashi says, Zakukla, since we're responsible for it, says Rashi, Litakna, to fix it. Hilkach, Sarach Lechadchilo La'asos Yofe, therefore we have to first try to make sure it's going to burn well. We have to use reliable oil or reliable wicks. Dilma Pasha V'lo Metakila. Because maybe you'll be posheya, you'll be negligent, and you won't fix it. This Rashi gets a lot of attention. Anybody see anything noteworthy about this Rashi? What Rashi is saying that provokes so much commentary? Well, one point that many Sfarim pick up on is the fact that Rashi uses this language of pasha, that maybe you will negligently, it's a language of judgment, that you will neglect to do your responsibility. And why is that significant? Because it sounds like Rashi is saying what? That if you forget to, let's say you have a good excuse, we're not worried about that so much. We're not so worried about there being a lack of flame. We're worried about your being negligent about it. It's hard to see why that should be. Why don't we just say any reason might happen, but you may not fix it? And that's enough reason to make sure that you should have a solid flame to begin with. So that Rashi gets a lot of attention, and we'll come back to it, but just while we're looking at the Gemara, just wanted to take note of that. But that's the first issue, so that's why you shouldn't use these candles, these wicks, these oils during the week. And why should you not use it on Shabbos? Because, according to this first opinion, mutter lishdamech la'orah. You're allowed to use these candles, the Hanukkah candles, light for your own purposes. So what? So what does that affect us practically in terms of Shabbos? So says Rashi, since you may use this on Shabbos, hilkach b'Shabbos aser shema yate l'tzorach tashmish. If it's going to be a shvach light, if it's not going to be really catching, so then you're using it on Shabbos, you're not going to be able to see well, you're going to tilt it, and that's going to be a serious malacha. That's going to be an act of havara. You're going to try to make more of the wick catch fire. So we don't want to put you in that position on Shabbos where you'll be likely to do that. So because of these two positions, la halacha, that it has to be relit, kav sazakukla, and you're allowed to use the candle, the first is a problem for the weekdays, the second is a problem for Shabbos. So don't use it during the week, and don't use it for Shabbos Chanukah either. For Rav Chisda, or Malika ben Bechol of Olav Shabbos, Rav Chisda says it's okay during the week, but not on Shabbos, so therefore mix and match the issues. Apparently, Kasava or Kavsa, top of the next page, Ein Zakuk Lo. We don't have to worry about relighting it, so if it goes out during the week, we don't care so much. But Mutter Lishdamish Laura, you can use the light, so therefore Shabbos is a problem, so use it during the week, don't use it on Shabbos. And then, next opinion, Amar of Zera, Amar of Masnavi, Amar of Zera, Amar of Silo Sushmanim, Shavar Chachamim, Malikim Ben Beshabbos, Malikim Ben Bechanika, Bein Bechal, Bein Beshabbos. Disagrees completely with the first opinion. You can use them both during the week and on Shabbos. Amar of Yirmiya, my time with the Rav, what's his reasons? Kasav or Kasav, Kasva, Ein Zakukla, that you're not responsible to relight it, so you can use it during the week. The Aser Lishdamesh La'ora, and you're not allowed to use the light, so therefore you're not going to use it on Shabbos, so you're not going to have any temptation to tilt the wicks. So Amru Rabbanan Kameh Dabaye Mishmei the Rav Yirmiya. So the Rabbanan said this in front of Abaye in the name of Rav Yirmiya V'lo Kibla, and he didn't accept it. Ki Asa Ravin Amru Rabbanan Kameh Dabaye Mishmei the Rav Yochanan. Then they said it again in the name of Yochanan and the Kibla, and then he accepted it. Amru Izakai Miracle Shmaisim Eikara. If I had been Zoche, if I had buried it properly, I would have learned this and understood it to begin with. So the response is, well, Bahagamra, so but now he knows it, so why is he crying over spilled milk? So Nafkamina Lagirsa the Yankasa. It makes a difference because the earlier in life you learn things, the good Musar Shmuz, the earlier in life you learn things, the better it's going to stick, the better impact it's going to have. So that's why he feels bad he didn't learn it earlier. Now this story a couple guys asked me about, I'm sure it strikes you as a little bit strange on a couple of levels, as probably having some significance beyond its details. There is a lot written about this. I'll be happy to share Mar Makomos with anybody who wants to look at it. It's a little bit of a tangent, so in the interest of focusing on some of the more halachic components we'll set aside for now, but if anybody is interested in trying to understand what the significance of this story is in the context of a particular din, we'd be happy to share some marmakomos. Chassam Sofer talks about it, a few others talk about it. There's a lot written about it, but we won't focus on it right now. But in any event, so that's what was related. So then the Gemara concludes, "Reminu mitzvasa mishitishka hamach ticha regal menashok." So this seems to contradict the idea of kavsei zochikla. Is it really true that you don't have to relight it, but only have the din that the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah starts from Shkiyas Achama and goes until people are no longer on the streets? Such a ticha regal menashok, which seems to suggest that you have to then relight it so that it's going the whole time. So then the Gemara concludes, no, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you have to have it lit the whole time. So my lab, the kavsa hadamadikla, sounds like if it goes out, you're going to have to relight it. So says the Gemara, lo, that's not what it means. It means one of two things, which seem to contradict each other. It seems the two answers, it's machlokas rishonim, this will be the third sugya that's relevant here, but seems to be two conflicting answers. One, that the ilom adlik madlik, it just means that if during that time you have not yet lit, then you still are allowed to light. That's still within the zone. Or inami l'shiure, that this is the measurement of how much oil you should put in the menorah. So those two answers, that's their own discussion, they seem to conflict with each other. There's important halachal mice implications as well. So we'll discuss that, God willing. That's number three of the sugyas that emerge from this, maybe counted as four. Basically, our three or four sugyas that emerge from this passage, which I'd like to try to talk about over the next few days. So the first on our agenda is, as you saw from our makomos, is kavsa zakukla or ein zakukla. The machloka is about what happens if your Hanukkah candle goes out. The second topic, as the Shem, will be the very practical issue of asur l'shtamish la'ora. We all know Haneris Halalu, when we declare that we're not allowed to use these candles, has some very major halachic implications. And then we'll discuss this third topic from the last line of the passage, the question of Achatich L'Regel Menashuk, the Zman of the Hadlaka, what exactly is the Zman, how does that play out? And this last line is very important because, again, which answer is dominant? Does it mean that that's the time within which you can light? Or does it mean that that's the measurement of oil that you have to put in, which has major implications? And, for example, just in terms of the sugya we're going to start today, about kavsa zakukla or lo zakukla, it's very much affected by that issue. Because if you're saying that you can light any time in the middle, so then it doesn't seem to be that there's any time that it has to be lit. So then we should say, presumably, kavsa lo zakukla. If there is a shear, so then there's what to talk about. Then maybe you can make a case that kavsa zakukla, that you have to keep it going that whole time. So if there's no shear, if the two answers contradict each other, if there's no amount of oil you have to put in, so then you say, well, I have to assume kavsa lo zakukla. I have to assume I don't have to relight it, because if there's no minimum, so if it lights for a minute, so then why do I have to care if it goes out? I fulfilled my mitzvah already. So the whole discussion of whether or not I have to relight it only seems to come up if there's some minimum period of time that I want it to finish. And then it could be that still the Gemara is then telling us a chiddush that there is a minimum, but the minimum only relates to how much oil you have to put in, not that it has to actually be lit all that time. Okay, so far so good? Everybody holding? All right, so let's start talking about kavsa zakukla. And this is a really fascinating sugya, and I think there's an opportunity to approach it in a very special way. And I'll explain what I mean. That I think we'll find that this and other sugyas on this daf, and in the upcoming dapim, will, through a back door, kind of bring us into very fundamental concepts about Hanukkah. And when we talk about kavsa zakukla, to try to understand it, as we'll start doing today, and because of time, we'll just get our feet wet a little bit, and we'll continue tomorrow. And tomorrow, I didn't mention, everyone knows we have early Tuesdays, and so we have a different shear structure. It means that we finish at 12. We usually start at 11:15. But hopefully, between today and tomorrow, we'll get some significant exposure to this topic. that we have to try to understand both positions. Why is it that I would say Kavsa Zakuk La, that I'm obligated to relight it? And why would it be that I would say the opposite? And to try to get an understanding of what's at stake here, we could at once consider both issues. Why? What are some of the implications of saying Zakuk La, and what are some of the implications of saying Lo Zakuk La? And through looking at both halves of the debate, we'll hopefully get some insight into what's going on here. And what we'll also see, and this is something that could be relevant to any sugya, but we'll certainly see it with this sugya, that we'll go through a couple of different aspects of this concept, a couple of different details within this whole story. And hopefully each phase of the discussion will give us some clues, will give us some insight as to what's at stake here. And then once we've seen all of the various sub-issues within Kavsa Zakuk Lo Zakuk La, and we look back on all the points, we'll be able to see a framework as to what exactly is at stake. So first of all, just in terms of the practicalities, just to say right off the bat what the din is. So we know from practice, and we know from looking at the little letters in the Gemara here, that what's the halacha concerning Kavsa Zakuk La? Or Lo Zakuk La? So we paskin Lo Zakuk La, Kavsa Ein Zakuk La. So therefore, that's what's brought in the Rambam, and that's what's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that if we light the Hanukkah candles and they go out, so then we're not obligated to relight it. So the Rambam brings it, the Shulchan Aruch brings it. The Shulchan Aruch throws in another phrase, which we'll talk about in a second, but that's essentially halacha psuka. And then the Ramah adds that if you want to be machmir and you want to relight it, okay, you could do that, but you don't make another bracha because you're not required to do that. And then the Mishnah Berurah adds, and we'll discuss a little bit the background of this discussion, that it's kedai to do that. That it's kedai to be machmir and to relight it, but strictly speaking, you're not required. You're not obligated. Now, just to mention another halachic point, so there's a sugya that we'll have down the line, but just to mention its relevance here, so I put it on the Mar Makomos, and I know some of the guys were intrigued by the implications of the sugya, but it's a different sugya, and God willing, we'll get to it. But the Gemara also later on introduces the concept of chashad, that sometimes we're worried about things looking bad when it comes to Neres Chanukah. So the Gemara says that in the time when they used to light outside the door, if you have a house that has two doors on different sides, so people can see one entrance without seeing the other entrance, so we're worried that people will look at that door and they'll think that no one's lighting a Chanukah candle. So we require Hanukkah candles at both doors. The extra one is there because of chashad. And it shouldn't look like this is a house without Neres Hanukkah. Now again, it's a fascinating sugya by itself. Why is it that dafka here we're worried about it? What are the practical implications of that? Is that reflective of a concern we find b'chol Torah kulo or specifically here? That's a sugya we'll get to. It's a later sugya. But there is a question that was raised. The Beis Halevi and others raised the issue. Why don't we say that here? That even if you're going to tell me that the halacha doesn't require you to relight the Hanukkah candles if they went out, but shouldn't this be comparable to somebody who has an extra door in his house, where the halacha wouldn't have required him to put Neres Hanukkah there, but because of the concern he's going to look suspicious, he's going to look like he's not lighting Hanukkah candles, we do therefore make him put one there? So why don't we say that here too? That, yeah, Kavsa Lo Zakuk La, technically speaking, the halacha would not have required you to have extra relightings, but because of suspicion, we want you to. So the Beis Halevi himself thinks, you know, maybe you should. That maybe it only means that if the candle kind of is still there, but it's not lighting well and it's dim, so then we don't obligate you to keep it going in a strong way. But if it really looks like there's nothing there, says the Beis Halevi, he thinks maybe Taki, you would have to relight it. Though he doesn't understand why that's not quoted in the Sefer Halacha so much, but he thinks that that makes sense. If you look in the Shari Tshuva, so you see the Shari Tshuva that was on the Mar Makomos, he quotes from the Shvus Yaakov, that he thinks that you do have to leave the oil and the containers and the wicks, whatever is left, you have to leave that there so people should see that there was a Hanukkah candle lit, and otherwise you would have a concern that people will think you're not involved in the mitzvah. Fine, right? Maybe that question.
So why not say you just put an empty menorah by your other door?
So maybe Taka's a good question. So then why don't you say that if it works after the fact, that's a fascinating question. So we'll save that for the sugya of the other door. That's an interesting issue to bring up. Rav Nevinzal Shlita has an essay that he has published in one of the journals where he suggests, just again to touch on that topic briefly, that the whole institution of cheshad, the whole institution of a menorah that's there because of suspicion, that was only put in when, at the time of the hadlaka, there's no hadlaka happening. But if there is a hadlaka, but it's over, but it stopped, so then we didn't make a new takana to have an extra one for suspicion. And he suggests that that actually emerges from the sugya. Because since kavsa lo zakukva, since if it goes out, we're on obligation to relight it, so no one should suspect you, because anybody whose menorah went out, says, okay, well, he doesn't only has to last as long as it lasts, so therefore there's nothing to be suspicious about. And therefore there's no reason to add another menorah or to have you fix it, dafka, because of the suspicion. So again, that's a whole sugya in itself, but just in terms of the halachic implications, just wanted to take note of that here.
It seems like Nevinzal, he's against the Shai.
Right, so they he correct. He basically seems to think that there is no institution of Chshad in this case, while the Beis Halevi more so, and the Shmos Yaakov thought there was a concern that the only thing that saves us from the concern is that the extinguished menorah is still there. So now to focus for a second on the sugya itself. So from a lamdisha perspective, what do you think the issue is when we talk about kavsa zakukla, lo zakukla? Do we obligate you to relight it? Do we not obligate you to relight it? What seems to be the issue? What's the central machlokas here? What are they fighting about? Yes?
So
this is
light it or candlelight?
That's what it seems like, right? It seems like on the surface that seems to present itself as a basic issue. Right? And that's the way earlier Svarim did understand the issue. And the Shulchan Aruch actually confused us a little bit on this point, because the Shulchan Aruch introduces a term from a later Gemara, which, let's take a moment to clarify. The Shulchan Aruch says that kavsa lo zakukla, now you saw this, so we're not obligated to relight it. Why? What's the phrase the Shulchan Aruch uses? What was that? But he says, quotes the phrase? Yes, exactly. Hadlaka osa mitzvah. So that's a little bit distracting, that phrase, because what it sounds like he's saying is exactly like you were suggesting just now, that what's the central machlokas? That what is the focus of Neres Hanukkah? Is it the mitzvah to light the candles? In which case, maybe after you light it, you're off the hook. Whatever happens, happens. Or is the mitzvah to have candles lit? And if that's the case, so then if they're out, if they're extinguished, you're going to be obligated to relight them. So it sounds like the Shulchan Aruch is addressing that. The Shulchan Aruch is actually quoting the Rashba, who we'll mention in a few minutes, that when he says, hadlaka is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is hadlaka, is the lighting, so therefore what happens afterwards is not your problem. That's what it sounds like he's saying. So the reason it's a little bit confusing is because there is a sugya that we'll get to, God willing, in the Gemara about this, machlokes, whether we say hadlaka osa mitzvah or hanacha osa mitzvah. Do we say that when you light the Hanukkah menorah, that the mitzvah is in the lighting, and therefore it has to be lit under perfect conditions? It has to be in the place where it's supposed to be. You can't light it somewhere in your closet and then move it to the right place. It has to be lit in the right place. Or do we say hanacha osa mitzvah, that the mitzvah takes place in the placing, and therefore we're less concerned about how and where it was lit? So by using that phrase, it sounds like he's tying this machlokas into that machlokas, that kavsa lo zakukla is hadlaka osa mitzvah, and kavsa zakukla is hanacha osa mitzvah. That might be true, it might not be true, and it's a little bit of a distraction. And if you look at the Taz over here, what the Taz seems to explain within the Shulchan Aruch is that the Shulchan Aruch probably doesn't mean that it's dafka taking sides in the hadlaka hanacha of this issue. What he means to say is that the maisa ha-mitzvah the action that you're doing, that's what the mitzvah is here. Not the state of having it around. So whether that action is hadlaka or hanacha or something else, is not really the point. It could have equally been hanachos and mitzvah, but still, that would mean that placing it there is your mitzvah, and you still might not be responsible for what happens afterwards. So it's a little bit of a confusion to use that terminology, which is also a machlokas in the Gemara, hadlaka or hanacha. It probably means it in kind of a looser sense, that the Shulchan Aruch seems to be saying that the mitzvah is the action here, and therefore once you've done the action, you're off the hook. And that is the way that Achronim have traditionally understood this. So for example, many quote from the Beis Ephraim. The Beis Ephraim was Ephraim Zalman Margolius, who was born in 1760. So he writes in his Shuvas in Aruch Chaim and Siman Samach Gimel, but that's the machlokas. The machlokas is, what's the mitzvah of Neris Chanukah? Is the mitzvah to put it there? To light it? That action of bringing it about? Or is the mitzvah that it should continue to be lit? And that's where you have this whole question. Kavsul zakuk la, because it's just an obligation to put it there? Or no, zakuk la, because the mitzvah extends beyond the lighting or the placement or the initial bringing it about? And that's why you would have a position that you have to relight it. How you doing? Excellent.
I might have misheard. I thought you said that they all agree that the action is, that an action is the point.
That's what the Shulchan Aruch seems to. The Shulchan Aruch who passes.
How could a meeting to stay lit be?
Yeah, not that everyone agrees that, that there are psak and halacha that we conclude that you don't have to relight it. So the Shulchan Aruch explains that using the terminology hadlaka osa mitzvah. So we were saying is that he doesn't necessarily mean to exclude the opinion in the Gemara that hanacha osa mitzvah. Right, it could be that maybe what he means to say is that your action is all that we're focused on, not what happens here. So it could be hadlaka or hanacha. Right, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive because they both mean something you do to get things started. And maybe that's all that matters, and what happens afterwards doesn't seem to be your concern. Hi. Right, and it certainly works for the position of halakha osa mitzvah, but what the Taz is filling in here is it doesn't have to end that discussion. It could still be hanacha osa mitzvah. What the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that your action is the mitzvah, and what happens afterwards doesn't seem to bother you. Doesn't seem to be our problem. So that's an interesting question in general. If this really is the machlokas, is that the whole story? Is it that we just want to know, is the mitzvah what you're doing? Or is the mitzvah having the neiros lit? Is that really the whole story? Are those the two possibilities? Is there any nuance there? This we'll have to see a little bit from some other details. And eventually, we'll get to this today, but we'll want to know what is behind this machlokas. So even if you're going to say one way or another, so why would I pick one view versus the other one? Why would I say that the mitzvah is the lighting or the placement as opposed to having the candles lit? Because presumably you can make a strong case for either, as we will try to discuss. It's also interesting to take note, if you saw in the Mar Makomos, that this position, this halach lamaisa of kafzul lo zakukla, seems to be at odds with the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, it sounds like from the Rambam, Hilchos Tamidim Musafin, that there is an obligation to relight the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash if it goes out. And Rashi and Menachah sounds the same way, that we say Kavsa Zakukla in the Beis HaMikdash. And Reb Chaim, his Chidushim on the Rambam, Hilchos Bias HaMikdash, Perek Tes Halacha Zayin. So the Reb Chaim explains that the din is in the Beis HaMikdash, that the mitzvah was to have candles burning. The mitzvah was not about lighting them, but it was about having them in existence. And therefore, it correlates that kavsa zakukla. If they go out, you have to relight them. So we don't necessarily have to assume that the menorahs of our houses on Hanukkah match the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, but it's definitely interesting. Maybe you would think they should match, maybe you would think they shouldn't match, but that's definitely something to take note of, this apparent disparity between what was in the Beis HaMikdash and the halacha that seems to apply to the menorah of Hanukkah. Now the Shulchan Aruch quotes another din, which was very controversial and could have fascinating implications. I don't know if any of you got to see the Trumas Hadeshim. One of the points I asked Jonathan to emphasize, some of the makoros on the list, sometimes they're a little harder to get, sometimes they're a little easier to get, depends on what kind of access you have. So shouldn't necessarily spend too much time looking for a specific sefer, especially because sometimes, very often, they'll be quoted in the later makoros. So this is an example, this Trumas Hadeshim, I'm about to mention, it's a Tshuva Kuf Beis, the Trumas Hadeshim. So if you have the opportunity to see it in Zion, you'll have a more thorough understanding. But if they're hard to find, he's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, he's quoted in the Nosekei in the Shulchan Aruch, so it's not worth spending a lot of time trying to get the sefer. But the Trumas Hadeshim has the following psak that the Shulchan Aruch quotes, and was a topic of great controversy. Let's say you want to tell me halakos, a mitzvah, kavshul, a zakakla, that apparently I fulfill the mitzvah by my very lighting of the Hanukkah candle, and then I'm done. Okay, I could accept that. But the Trumas Hadeshim takes it a step further, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this halakha. Says the Trumas Hadeshim, what happens on Friday? On Friday afternoon, so you have to light the menorah early. You can't light it on Shabbos. So even though normally we're going to light at Shkia time, or after Shkia, on Friday we clearly can't do that because of Yisr and Malacha. So as we know, we push up the lighting before Shkia. Says the Trumas Hadeshim, what would happen if I light 5 minutes before Kabbalah Shabbos? And then right away it goes out. Before Kabbalah Shabbos, I still have a minute to relight it. Would you say Kavsa Zakakla or Lo Zakakla in such a situation? So what would you say? What do you think? What seems more logical?
Yeah.
Yeah, what? Which one?
Relight it.
Relight it, right? Why would you say relight it? Not just as a Chumrah, but maybe Meikar Hadin.
It wasn't Hanukkah,
right? There's one thing for you to tell me it wasn't the mitzvah that night. Could be Hanukkah, but it wasn't the mitzvah that night. Right? You would say, okay, fine. A second is enough, maybe. Maybe if I light it on Hanukkah and it goes out a second later, I could believe that's enough. But this is before the mitzvah even started. The mitzvah is at night, and normally every other night, every weekday night of Hanukkah, I have to wait till dark to light. It's only because of Shabbos I'm doing it in advance. So I'm doing it before the time of the mitzvah. So you're going to tell me, Kavsa Lo Zakuk La, even there? That's very surprising. It was too surprising for some of the other posts. So, for example, the Marshal was the contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch. The Marshal, if you have access to it, could I see, but his psukim are quoted in the Nosek Kalim all the time, so you'll see it one way or another. But Simon Pehe, in the Chuvis Marshal, he has all of his psukim about Hanukkah over there in Simon Pehe. And in one of the paragraphs, he has three or four rulings about this issue of Kavsa Zakuk La. Each one is significant and ends up getting brought in one place or another in the Nosei Kalim. So you could either see it all in one place in the Chuvis Marshal, or you could see half a sentence at a time in a different Nosei Kalim who quote him. Each statement has an impact. It's a very dense three lines in the Chuvis Marshal. But he takes issue with this. He says that Erev Shabbos, you light the menorah and it goes out, you have to relight it. And he writes, V'deloka Maharai. This is not like the Maharai. That means not like Rav Yehuda Isserlein, who is the Trumas Hadeshim. So he identifies the Trumas Hadeshim as somebody who he disagrees with. He says he thinks that psak is wrong, that if it goes out before the time has started of the mitzvah, you have to relight it. And the Taz takes great issue with this as well. The Taz over there with the Shulchan Aruch quotes this Trumas Hadeshim. Taz doesn't see how this could be. He says, one thing to say that a second of Hanukkah is enough, but if it's not Hanukkah yet, if you haven't started the mitzvah, so how could it be that you could fulfill it during that time? And we could say, Kav Shelo Zakuk La. So this is the first of many issues, as I mentioned, which we could use to try to discern some clues, we could use to try to glean some extra insight into what's going on here. So let's try to work for a minute on this Truma Sadesh. Anyone have a suggestion? How could you explain this Psak, which again is the Shulchan Aruch Psak, so the Shulchan Aruch Salah Lamaisa, how could you explain this view that not only are you not obligated to fix your Hanukkah candle when it goes out, but even if it goes out before the time of the mitzvah even started, that's also the same thing. Yes, sir?
That's the only way that it could work on that, or else you wouldn't have been able to light Hanukkah candle on Erev Shabbos. How's it, what mechanism is everyone else having that once half hour later when Shabbos starts, it suddenly comes into play?
Okay, like, so it's true. When we talk about Shabbos, as we'll see, this will come up in some other points. Right, so it's true that you have to do things before Shabbos, and you're forced into that position because of Hilchos Shabbos. But how does that help us here, though? Unless what you're trying to say.
If the action in the entire place of the myth was happening when I do whatever action is the Hanukkah or the Hanukkah, then somehow that has to happen before Shabbos. Like, what is suddenly coming into play now that Shabbos started and the sun goes down? And now my menorah is happening.
Oh, okay, so I think you're saying a mechudish understanding, which is not the way it's normally understood. Okay, you hear what he's saying? He's saying like this, that normally the mitzvah starts at dark. But Friday night you can't do that. So therefore, what does it mean when we say we light before dark? You might have thought that it means that you have to light it before the mitzvah starts, because when the mitzvah begins, you're not going to be able to do it. But what if you say no? What if you say it means that Chazal extended the time of the mitzvah? That normally the mitzvah only starts at dark, but because of the technicalities of Shabbos, it starts, 20 minutes before dark. Which is an interesting idea. And then you'll say, okay, so that's why he says Kassel is offered. Well, because the same way, on any other night, you fulfill the mitzvah with a second of the mitzvah. Here too, the mitzvah has started. That's a very interesting possibility.
How would it come, according to everyone, I'm saying, how else would it come into play that when does it happen that as soon as Shabbos starts, like what now is making my menorah? If the lighting is before, like how does it suddenly come?
Okay, so you're saying that otherwise you're stuck with a problem. You're stuck saying that if normally I have to do something in order to fulfill the mitzvah, so how do I fulfill it Friday night? Friday night I'm in a passive position because whatever needs to be done, I've done before Shabbos. So either that's got
to
be valuable.
For it to happen on Shabbos because it's still Shabbos.
Right. So you're saying, so is that simply a technicality? Or should we say that no, that it must show there's some way to fulfill the mitzvah that's true during the week as well? So that's an interesting question, and we'll discuss that in a second. It'll be more specifically relevant. We'll probably have to get to it tomorrow. By the way, in general, we try to, at least in Elul, it's our aspiration, try to daven mincha with yeshiva, which is at 2:33. So in a few minutes, we'll stop in order to have time to get to the base medrash, and we'll have to continue this tomorrow. But Simcha's point is well taken, that it's a little bit of a chiddush. It's a big chiddush, but maybe you could say that Chazal extended the time and on Shabbos, or maybe that's not what you're saying. Maybe that's one take on what you're saying. Either you could say that Chazal extended the time on Friday, or no, this shows you that really always the mitzvah is passive. But both of those are a little tricky, though, because to say the mitzvah is passive during the week, we don't find any application of that. And to say the extent of the time, so on the one hand, you have to say something like that. You have to say that there's a concession made for Shabbos, but you have a little bit of a fundamental problem because...
Something
has to happen. Sorry? The Zman is a little bit to do with reality. Yeah. That the assumption is that a candle in the daylight is nothing. Shragra b'tihara ma'hanila, that there's no significance to a candle during the daytime. So to say you're fulfilling anything then is harder. What seems to be the most likely pshat, without the Truma Sadesha, we would most likely have said that normally you have to light at night, and because technically on Friday night you can't do it, so Chazal allowed you to prepare the light in advance and have it there on Shabbos. But that the mitzvah still is at night. The candle doesn't have any impact during the daytime. So it's still the Truma Sadeshan who surprises us by saying that even if it goes out and you have a chance to relight it, you're done. I saw an explanation, one of the great Rashi Yeshiva in the Chevron Yeshiva, Avram Farbstein, so he wanted to say as follows, you could take this or not, so he wanted to suggest that normally when you have a mitzvah, so you have the action to bring about the mitzvah, and you have the impact of the mitzvah. So normally you'd assume that that's what you have to do. You have to do the action, and you have to make sure that it brings about its impact. When it comes to Chanukah, the whole halacha of Kav Shelo Zakuk La means that for some reason, and we need a greater explanation of what that reason is, for some reason, Chazal only required us to do the action part and didn't obligate us to worry about the impact. That normally you have to do the action and make sure it has its impact, and here Chazal said the action is enough. So then, maybe, says Mefarbstein, the Truma Sedeshin's point is that once Chazal already said the action is enough without worrying about the impact, it's a short jump to say that the action doesn't even have to be during the time of the mitzvah. You could do the action at a time when the impact is impossible and still be off the hook, still have done your part. And maybe the Taz agrees halfway. The Taz says, yes, it's true that you're not responsible for the impact, but that's true if it's done during the time when the impact was possible. Ephraim likes that position better. But to say that Trumas Hadeshim, that once we're only interested in the action can be completely separated from the impact, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Why can't I still light Chanukah candles tomorrow?
You're saying,
this Chanukah,
right, so it's hard to believe. You're saying, so yeah, you find Trumas Hadeshim to be a stretch. Because of time limitations, so I should point out that Trumas Hadeshim himself explains his logic in a little bit of a different way, which we'll have to... Did anyone get to see the Trumas Hadeshim quoted by any of the Mefarshim and in Ilseh Kelim? So hopefully tomorrow morning is a truncated Seder until about 11:15. Tomorrow, hopefully, if you get a little further than Marmar Komos, try to see at least the quoted version of the Truma Sedeshin, if not the Truma Sedeshin inside. Maybe, Jonathan, I'll send you a link if you want to print out the copies. And you can see the way the Truma Sedeshin explains his view, and we can still see if this has some other possible implications. So just a very quickly review we spoke about. We spoke about the fact that Kavsa Zakukla, that's the way we, Kavsa Lo Zakukla, that's the way we paskin, so you don't have to relight. The question of whether you have to worry about Chashad, different views in the poskim, what's this about? So the Shulchan Aruch says, because of Lach Osa Mitzvah, doesn't necessarily mean he's taking a stand in that machlokas in the Gemara, but just seems to be the focus on the Maisa. And the general understanding, like the Beis Ephraim, is that the question is, are we interested in what you do or about keeping the action going? But we want to see if there's a little bit more to say about it. And we saw this particularly interesting point, the Truma Sedeshin's Chiddush, that not only are you not obligated to relight it, but even when it's Friday afternoon and you light before Shabbos, and you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah yet at all, you're still not obligated to relight. The Maharshal and the Taz disagreed, and we just spent a few minutes trying to understand why that might be, and we'll have to continue with that, God willing, tomorrow. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Let's see you in the next message.